rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Schmidt, Judge Ross, Judge Eid. The Honorable Judge Schmidt presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have four cases on for today, three for argument. We'll go through the normal procedures. I think you're both familiar with the process, but the podium will adjust up and down. Please feel free to get yourself situated before you start your argument. Each side will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and then the appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for your rebuttal. And please make sure you state your name and who you represent before you begin your argument. And with that, I'll have the marshal call the first case.
Calling A24-0229, complaint decision file 24-043C on behalf of students from Minnetonka ISD 0276-01.
All right, and counsel for appellant, when you're ready, you can get yourself situated. The buttons are right in the center of that if you want to lower or raise it. But you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name's Laura Booth. I'm a lawyer with Ratwick, Rozak, and Maloney. I'm joined this morning by my colleague, Adam Fruden, and a number of the district's administrators in the galley. We represent ISD 276, the Minnetonka Public Schools. There is only one remaining issue in this appeal. It is whether the school district complied with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and the corresponding state law. The district did so, and this appeal should be ruled in favor of the school district. Briefly, I'd like to put this in context. A parent filed a complaint with the Minnesota Department of Education, or the MDE, because her student was to receive his 90 minutes of reading instruction on his IEP, or Individualized Education Program, asynchronously, that is, in an e-learning day without a live teacher, on one day, October 13, 2022. The school district had scheduled an e-learning day and given notice to all parents, and the notice reminded parents that students would receive their instruction asynchronously rather than synchronously, that is, with a live teacher. To prepare the complainant's student, MK, the child's special education teachers met with him prior to the e-learning day to instruct him, to provide pre-instruction on the work he was to do on that day. They provided him with work that was individualized to his particular learning needs.
I don't want to cut you off too prematurely, but I don't want you to lose all the time describing the facts, which are well outlined in the briefs. I had a question about your harmless error, sort of de minimis argument. I didn't see a lot of case law supporting the idea that a violation that may not have a significant practical impact is not a violation that can be enforced. And I want to see if there's more case law out there than I think you cited an FSUP case, but nothing more. Can you develop that argument?
Yes, Your Honor. There is an Eighth Circuit case, at least one, where the court finds that an error that doesn't harm the student's educational progress is not one that will invalidate an otherwise appropriate IEP. But I think the more important issue in this case is, at least from our perspective, Your Honor, the Department of Education initially ordered that school districts could not use e-learning. The district objected to that, and MDE clarified its order. In other words, they changed their order and agreed that school districts may use e-learning days. They had predicated their initial determination on the wrong statute. So there's no dispute we can use e-learning days. There's also no dispute that this child received a free appropriate public education, or a FAPE, what he's entitled to under the special ed law, both federal and state. So given that the student received a FAPE, and given that Minnesota schools are permitted to use e-learning days MDE should have found in favor of the school district that it complied with the law. Instead, it found that the school district hadn't written into the IEP the location of service for this one particular day, and it suggested one way to correct that was to remind parents that they could have an IEP team meeting. The problem with that recommendation is that parents always have that right, and parents are informed of that right in writing in their procedural safeguards notice every year.
Well, after I took you off of your effort to describe the facts, I'm going to ask you about the facts, just so I'm clear on it. So help me to understand this. There's e-learning. When I think of e-learning, I think of a teacher face-to-face kind of in a Zoom-type interaction. But I see this described as something somewhat different, asynchronous. Is that not different from basic e-learning? So your argument, I think, is based on just having the online learning, but why isn't this type of program different from the basic face-to-face that you might have over the internet?
Right. So e-learning days are permitted by statute in Minnesota. E-learning can be synchronous or asynchronous. Synchronous learning means a teacher is live over the internet with the student. The asynchronous learning means something else. In this case, so it could be that the teacher has recorded the lesson.
Even with an IEP, you're saying that would be?
Even with students with an IEP, and in our brief we cite in our appendix, we've provided the Minnesota Department of Education's guidance that is appropriate. So asynchronous learning could be via a video recording. It could be the teacher providing instructions in writing a packet of work. It could be the student watching some video, hearing a lesson, a variety of different things. But in this case, the school district, in response to its community asking for more meaningful time to have parent-teacher conferences for middle school students, in response to that request, the district scheduled this e-learning day so that teachers could be more available to parents to have those conferences. So the learning had to be asynchronous because the teachers were engaged in these conferences. In this particular case of student MK and all other students similarly situated, the 299 other middle school students, the district said, if your child has questions or concerns, reach out to a teacher. When they're not in conference, they will reach out to your child and answer the questions. The district also offered to have the student come into the school building and he or she could work with a paraprofessional while they did their particular work. So
you cited an Eighth Circuit case earlier in your argument that the harmless technical violations exception applied to an error that doesn't affect or harm a student's progress, but isn't the other part of that an analysis of the parent's right to notice participation and due process, and isn't part of the problem in this situation that the district unilaterally chose this asynchronous learning day and then applied it to 300 students with IEPs?
Your Honor, you've hit the nail on the head. MDE would like the court to believe that this was a unilateral removal of some type of IEP duty or obligation by the school district. Not so. In the Robbinsdale case that MDE cites, that there are two of them. The first one involves approximately 60 students who had DAPE, developmental adaptive physical education, swimming on their IEPs. Robbinsdale unilaterally removed that service without looking at the individualized need of the particular child. Here, MK had 90 minutes of reading instruction, special education, on his IEP. It wasn't removed. It was just delivered from a different location. And he received a FAPE. He did beautifully. He made excellent progress. He was reading at grade level.
Delivered from a different location, but it was delivered asynchronously, right? I mean, so it wasn't, I mean, there wasn't a live teacher, a special education teacher interacting with the student. I mean, that was the issue, right?
That was the piece that the parent objected to. When MDE looked at this case, however, they started with e-learning is inappropriate. Now we know there's no dispute that districts can use e-learning. There's nothing in the law that says we can't use asynchronous learning. We use it in the classroom all the time. Teacher gives an assignment like she did with MK, gives instruction about how to complete the assignment. Student sits with a paraprofessional and does that work, takes the work home and does homework. The nub of this case, the gravamen of it really is, did the student receive his rights under IDEA? MDE didn't say his rights were violated. All they recommended was a blanket notice to all parents that they could ask for an IEP team meeting.
And that's the part where I'm a little confused on. Why is that so onerous that where it says, okay, you have a violation of the idea, but then you have, here's a way to fix it going forward. It's just one more sentence in an email. And so I wasn't sure, you know, and forgive me for my ignorance. I'm just not sure, like, if there's enough violations, does the school start losing funding? Like, how does that work?
Well, it wouldn't be particularly onerous, but it's not required by the law. An IDEA in the regulations states, and we say this in our brief, the MDE cannot add to IDEA requirements that are not already there. We've already given parents notice of their right to an IEP team meeting. The evidence is here in this case. The parent objected, exercised her right. The district offered her an IEP team meeting, precisely what MDE is saying we should have done. So at issue for the school district is, don't add to IDEA's already many notice requirements in a situation like this.
Did the student here have a paraprofessional that was available on the e-learning day?
Yes, all students had paraprofessionals available in the school building if they wanted to come in and do that work. He didn't have a paraprofessional, to my recollection, Your Honor, a one-on-one that is assigned just to him. Paraprofessional, he had what's called a group paraprofessional, so there might have been a paraprofessional in his classroom. This reading instruction was one-to-one with the teacher. So I think it's important to...
Can I just ask one other question? Because yes. I'm not sure that I understood your response to Judge Schmidt's first question. I took it that Judge Schmidt was asking whether there was some sort of collateral consequence that flowed from the IDEA violation, for example, funding to the district, that's at play here. And so I just want to confirm, as I understood your response, the issue is that the district's position is that it's not something like that. It's just simply that MDE can't add to the requirements of the IDEA by requiring something more that the law actually necessitates. Is that your position?
Your Honor, it's actually both. The school district could lose funding. I will admit it would be a long shot, but if the district has repeated violations that MDE has determined, eventually the Minnesota Department of Education could move to limit or remove its state and federal funding. So it's a serious consequence. It's also a serious consequence to have MDE make the law without any process, add to an already robust statute more requirements, and a requirement that's meaningless. Tell all parents in a big general email that they can ask for an IEP team meeting. They already have that right. The right is in writing through the Notice of Procedural Safeguards. It was their way of potentially correcting the wrong. So I want to reiterate that in this case, unlike all of the cases that MDE cites, the school district didn't remove the special ed service. They delivered it from a different location in a different method. The student was pre-taught, just like he might be in a classroom. He had the opportunity to ask questions. He didn't. He did well on the assignment, completed the assignments. Teachers checked with him the next day. Our client wants the freedom to exercise its professional discretion in how it provides services to students. And we ask that this court reverse MDE's order. I'll save my remaining time.
I just want to ask one follow-up factual question. I thought the student finished one assignment and started the second but didn't complete it.
That's accurate. And just like on any other school day, the next day the teacher asked him where he was on the assignment and they completed it. He did well on the assignment and he continued to receive what he was entitled to, which is a free appropriate public education. He was reading at grade level, doing very well because of that very instruction.
I have another question about it. It feels like there's a bit of a burden shifting, that it's putting it on the parents to come forward and say, hey, you're changing what the normal school day is here by having a remote e-learning day. So it's your obligation to come and say, I want to check in with my IEP team. And what the department is saying is, just remind folks of that, that they have that opportunity. Do you see where I'm getting there with, like, it feels like it's sort of putting the burden on the parents to affirmatively assert their, I have this IEP and you as a school need to follow it?
Right. We agree with you that it shifts the burden to parents. Parents aren't obligated to tell the school district that they need an IEP. Parents are not obligated to tell the district they need an IEP meeting. The district is obligated to do that, and they do it by looking at, has the IEP delivered a FAPE to the child? And there's no evidence in this record that that is not the case. So the district wasn't shifting the burden to the family. The second point, Your Honor, is if you just think practically, students aren't always educated in the precise classroom that is anticipated for the reasons that we talk about in our brief. They might have state testing that day, so they're in a different location. They might go on a field trip. The teacher might be absent. There are myriad reasons why the location of the service is not really the issue here. It's, did the child get the service he was entitled to? And he did in this case. Unlike the Robbinsdale cases where for DAPE swimming and extended school year, the district just said, despite the fact it's on your IEP, we're taking it away. Here, MK had 90 minutes of reading instruction. We didn't take it away. The district provided it. Student received a FAPE. Thank you.
You'll have 5 minutes on your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent, when you're ready, please take your time, get situated, but then you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Martha Cassily. I'm the attorney for the respondent, Minnesota Department of Education, the agency decision maker in this case. Here, the Department of Education, under its supervisory compliance authority, determined that Realtor Minnetonka Public Schools violated federal special education law by unilaterally deciding that no consideration or revisions of any student's education plans would be undertaken for a pre-planned, no-teacher, asynchronous school day. I want to correct something here that the district's argument, opening argument to this case, in that here, the parent, when the parent learned that they were going to an all-digital asynchronous day without any teacher, the parent reached out and said, could my child be provided this? Now, her child was entitled to 90 minutes of direct reading with a special education teacher. She offered, could we do it virtually? I'm fine for that. Now, let me know what time before or after. The parent reached out to the case manager and teacher. Could it be done on a different day so that my child can get the 90 minutes of direct services from a special education teacher? And here, three times, the principal at that school said no. No direct services will be provided. We will provide a packet. The packet will be tailored to that student, but it will not be instructions. It will not be the services as provided in that student's IEP. And the parent, what's of concern here is the not following the procedural safeguards in the IDEA. Procedural safeguards are key cornerstones of the federal special education law. As this court said the IDEA seeks to achieve is substantive and largely by procedural means. So the IDEA doesn't say, this disability, you get this service. The IDEA sets forth the procedures. That's what's key in this case, is the district did not follow the procedural safeguards here. And that is when it decided on its own to have an asynchronous school day, that no teachers would be available. So this is not simply just a change of location. As the district absurdly puts in its brief, it's just moving from a classroom to the gym. No, it's different. It's not providing the instructions as this child, student one, was entitled to direct services by a special education teacher. And instead, the student would be given a packet. When the parent questioned on it, the principal said, well, you know, there's a red tab. And if you have trouble, there's a parent tab for instructions for how to teach your child.
May I ask you a question?
Sorry
to interrupt. What do you make of your counterpart's harmless technical violation argument, specifically that notice provided at the beginning of the school year that parents can always ask for an IEP team meeting renders the lack of notice for the asynchronous day a harmless technical violation? And can you let me know your position on whether or not that specific argument was raised in the briefing?
No, the notice that was sent at the beginning of the year saying you always can ask for an IEP or reach out to your special ed teachers or case manager does not make this all okay, because it was, number one, here, this parent did reach out. She reached out multiple times, and they kept saying, no, we're not going to consider it. No, we're not going to meet. So this court has already decided in the Bonney decision where something was sent in a different place. And there the district said, well, we already told them it had to do with a definition of extended school year. And we said, well, you know, over here we said it, so that makes this okay. And this court said no, that was not sufficient. So here the concern was, the crux of the concern was that when the district decided to have an asynchronous day, it said none of its children, none of the 300 children, that they would consider the special education services for those students. They would all receive the services asynchronously without any school teacher. So they made a unilateral determination without looking at the individual child's case. That the department asked, what did you do for the other 299? And they said, no, we didn't revise anybody's IEPs. They also violated the IDEA by not having the parent participate in that decision-making process. And so the department, again, this is a supervisory oversight. The department said, if you are going to do these types of no teacher school days in the future, you had four of them in the 3 years. But if you're going to continue to do this, you need to have a plan to make sure that you need to change your practice. You have to have a plan as to how you're going to consider special education services for those children. Those children are entitled to special education services, whether remotely, hybrid, or in person. And what had happened in this case was the principal said, we're not going to consider it. It's only one day. We're not, your child will have a packet, and that's what is going to be done. And we're not going to, no other children are going to get direct services as provided by their IEP. That was the concern, because procedures here is what's key here, and that they didn't follow the procedures in having parental participation. They made a unilateral determination district-wide. So the department ordered the relief to say, going forward, you need to make sure these children get plans. You can't unilaterally say we're not going to consider it. It's only one day, and at some point, if it's lots of days, then maybe we will. Well, no, the district doesn't get to make that determination. It's supposed to be done with an IEP team. So the second issue is the remedy here. And the department clearly is authorized under once it has found a violation, which here it did, because it determined this, it determined that no, we're not going to consider or revise IEPs for asynchronous days. So the department has the broad authority to determine a remedial relief. Here they did not order individual relief, but there are two components here. They also have the responsibility to order appropriate future provision of services for all children in the district. So the order here, and I want to make clear, the order here was for the district to propose a plan. It was up to the district how it wanted to propose the plan. It could provide a policy to say, if we decide to do these asynchronous days in the future, this is what we're going to do. They're supposed to have a plan for snow days. They should, if they're going to continue with this, they should have a plan. Maybe every time we have an IEP meeting, because we're supposed to have one a year, let's talk about this issue, because we think we're going to go do these in the future. They could do that. They could provide training. Court decisions by this court in reviewing MDE's state corrective action order, you know, give plenty of guidance as to the different types of plans they could have done. They could have provided training. They could have adopted a policy to how to avoid this violation in the future. Or number three, and it's the Robbinsdale 2 case. Go ahead, Judge.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask you another question. Is it MDE's position that all blanket unilateral decisions of this nature that alters IEPs for students in a district fall outside the harmless technical violation exception? I noticed that the statute subdivision 28 of 125A.091 is phrased in the singular, so it talks about a student's educational progress or the parent's right to notice. I know that statutory interpretations may interpret both the singular as pure plural, but I was just wondering what MDE's position on that was. I mean, you know, is it the case that as a matter of law, a blanket unilateral decision that applies to all special education students in a district cannot be a harmless technical violation, particularly as to notice, participation, and due process?
Well, this law was amended in 2008 to apply to special education complaint decisions. And I think you would look at it at if a school district future sets a policy, as you said, that affects special education services for students, then the a policy, a district-wide policy, would harm a parent's right to participation, notice, and due process. And I'm glad you brought up the technical harmless violation, because here this was not just a technical error. It was not a situation where the district sent a notice out 9 days before when they were supposed to do 10 days before. This was a blatant denial of services. This was no, I know your child is supposed to get direct services from a special education teacher. We're not going to provide it that day. That was an outright denial, and they said it three times. And yes, they had mentioned at the last one, they said, well, if you want to ask your case manager or teacher, you can do that, when she had already done that multiple emails before. So it's not just a technical violation. It was a denial and of both substitute services, but it was a denial of the procedural rights that this parent has to be a part of the decision-making process to determine what services would be provided for their child. That's key, parental participation.
So looking
number
at the,
two, it's not harmless because the parent was denied her participation rights.
So looking at the remedy.
Thank you.
So if the remedy is, the satisfactory remedy from the department's perspective is an IEP meeting, notice, and then an IEP meeting, that's sufficient. You're saying that would be sufficient even if, as it turns out, in all 300 of these meetings, the district decides to do the same, that, okay, we've had the meeting, you've participated in the process, But under the circumstances, we still need to go forward with asynchronous learning. Am I correct that would be fine? And if so, answer that question. Maybe it's not if so.
Hopefully I heard your question, but you're kind of talking about the process. So suppose parent asked for an IEP meeting. They had an IEP meeting to talk this. They still don't agree. The district says, no, we're going to do the e-learning days. And parent disagrees. Then they're supposed to put what's called a prior written notice. And although it's called prior, always confused me, but they send a prior written notice. The parent has 10 days in which to send an objection. The parent also has the right to have a conciliation meeting. The parent could ask for mediation. Either party could ask for due process hearing. So there is a procedural process to go through if the parents and the districts do not agree at that IEP meeting. And that's what this case is about, the procedural safeguard, that this parent should be, and the parents of the other students be told that, hey, if we're going to continue with these asynchronous days without teachers, that a reminder to everyone, you still have special education rights.
So the notice then just gives it begins a process. Notice by itself may not be sufficient as the process goes forward. It still might be a determination that, no, the asynchronous learning would not be sufficient for this child or that child. Am I understanding that correctly or not?
So the key point here is that the district had a policy, which their emails evidence a policy, and the corrective action plan was to have a plan to address that. And that could be done a multiple different ways. In the clarification, the department said if you wanted to send a notice out, and this court approved that notice process in Robbinsdale 2, which is the January 2008 case, where the department ordered the district to send notice to those affected kids, send them directly, which is not what this one ordered. And this court held that that was sufficient because it told the parent something, a right they already had. But it was important to tell them, say, your child may be entitled to these services. And so notice can be an appropriate situation here. Here, the district picked that option. They didn't need to pick that option. They're criticizing it now, but that's the option that they picked if they could have done a different option. So notice, it is reminding and again, the department here was looking forward. It's the supervisor. It needs to make sure that if they wanted to continue these, it needed to comply with the IDEA. And it was up to the district as to how to do it. The district chose the notice option. I see my time is up. The Department of Education respectfully requests that the court affirm the department's decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes when you're ready.
I'd like to focus the court's attention again on that Robbinsdale case that my colleague, Ms. Casserly, just noted. In that case, when the school district unilaterally said no more service in DAPE swimming, the MDE ordered that they use the prior written notice. And this is really an important distinction. You know from the facts recited by both parties, MDE did not order a prior written notice in this case. So I want to go back and fill this in here. MDE couldn't have ordered the school district to do a prior written notice here because the law requires a prior written notice under certain circumstances. If the district's going to change the identification, the evaluation, the educational placement, or the provision of FAPE to a student, Minnetonka didn't change any of those. That's why MDE didn't order a prior written notice. I mean, look at the facts. There was no change to MK's identification. He's still a student with special needs in the area of reading. There was no change to his evaluation. He's still entitled to special ed. He remained in the educational placement that he was in. An educational placement is a term of art in special education law. It means the minutes of service he gets in special ed, in MK's case, 90 minutes of special ed instruction, and the number of minutes he's in the general ed environment. There was no change to his educational program. The last element where a district would have to do a PWN, a prior written notice, is when they're going to change the provision of FAPE. Well, there's no dispute at all in this case. This young man received FAPE. He did very well. He was reading at grade level. This one day didn't impact his education at all.
I mean, isn't the issue, it seems like the issue that MDE has been raising is not so much the harm to the educational process, but the notice and the procedure. And so what's your response to the argument that MDE made that there were three requests to have an individual instructor provide individual instruction on the asynchronous day? All of those were denied, and how do we interpret that with regard to your argument that there was never an IEP team meeting request on behalf of the student? I mean, if the answer was going to be no, there's nothing you can do about it, you're stuck with this, then how do you win on harmless technical violation?
So if the Minnesota Department of Education truly believed that we were changing the special education services, that we were doing what Robbinsdale did, taking away the swimming lessons, taking away the extended school year, if they truly believed that, they should have ordered us to do a prior written notice. They did not. Why not? Because there was no change in the service. That's the issue here. For this particular child, the only one we have evidence about, it didn't harm his education. What MDE says in their reclarification order, we're not asking you to have an IEP team meeting. We're not ordering that. We're just telling you to remind parents of their rights. And as I indicated earlier, we remind them of their rights as the law requires us to do. We chafe at the idea of more procedural paperwork under this already complicated statute, and we're certainly not going to have IEP team meetings for 299 students to deliver the exact service on the IEP in a different way. Teachers have to have the discretion. They are professionals. In this case, a reading specialist knows how to deliver reading. In this case, she instructed the student prior to the e-learning day.
But did the student have the one-on-one learning that is part of the IEP?
The student had the direct instruction that is required by the IEP. His IEP, I just looked at it quickly, doesn't say one-on-one instruction. It says direct instruction in the special education classroom, 90 minutes by a licensed teacher. He got that, except he wasn't in the special ed classroom. Direct instruction is a term of art, and in our appendix we have guidance from MDE about this. Direct instruction means instruction from a teacher.
Did he get the 90 minutes worth of direct instruction?
He did, and MDE does not fault the district for that in its determination. My colleague, Ms. Casserly, says the district gave him a packet. There's zero evidence in this record that he was given a packet. The evidence is he was instructed, pre-instructed the day before, or a few days before, I'm not certain of the timeline. He was given the opportunity to reach out to his teacher via Schoology, which he had done before, his parent had done before. And this is probably not all that relevant, Your Honors, but when MDE says there were no teachers available, there were teachers available, just not when they were doing a conference with another family. This parent didn't reach out for that, and they could have.
I have one more question for you. So at what point does it become that the school is taking away services? Let's say the school decides December is a month where there's so many absences, all of December is going to be an asynchronous day, and we're going to give the students 90 minutes of instructions on all the worksheets for all the days in December. Is that a point where services are now being taken away?
No. The school district wouldn't do that. In an answer to MDE's inquiry about this during the investigation, Dr. Christine Breen, the director of special services, specifically addressed that. When we're talking about a day or two, there was 1.3 days over 4 years that we've done this. That is where the district is. If we go beyond that, then there might need to be more process. But the district hasn't gone beyond that. And thinking about it or asking as the parent might, are you going to do this in the future is kind of speculative. The district has done a day, you know, and a third over the last 4 years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your arguments today. It was very well argued and well briefed, and we will get an opinion out within the statutory time frame. Thank you.